help my DTC grow. Strategies and quick wins that build up 8-figure DTC brand.
Can AI supercharge your e-commerce game? Unlocking customization with Matthew Gardner from Salsita. Today's guest is Matthew Gardner, the CEO of Salsita, a design-driven development service provider specializing in custom 3D configurators. With a portfolio that includes industry giants like eBay and SAP, Salsita has been recognized in the Clutch 1000 list of top global B2B providers. Matthew has a long history in tech. Before Salsita, he was a part of major corporations like Yahoo and Mozilla and co-founded a startup called AllPeers. He is joining us from Prague today. You will get the answers to these following questions. What steps can be taken to provide a personalized e-commerce experience? How can marketers generate a large amount of personalized content with AI? What have been the challenges with selling customizable products online, and how can AI help overcome them?
And of course, I'm here to help your DTC brand grow, so I asked all my favorite questions at the end. Books to read, mistakes to avoid, quick growth tips, and tools to use. Now let's get ready!
What do you think? How can generative AI benefit customers of an e-commerce brand?
Well, from the customer's perspective, I think that the biggest things are more personalization. I think a lot of people who've used an eShop know the frustration of going there and searching for some specific product and then seeing basically a sea of thumbnails and having to click on each one, read the description, go back, click on another one. And it's really difficult in many cases to find exactly the product you want. And so I think that's the biggest promise of generative AI is that it's going to understand a lot better what you're looking for and provide also new modes of interaction so that you can, instead of just, you know, searching, filtering, clicking on thumbnails, you can just tell it what you want and have it show you the products that match your requirements without you having to go through that whole painful process. So that's one big point. And another big point, I think, is also having more of an experience analogous to what you would expect to have in a bricks and mortar store. So I think people have kind of accepted when they're shopping online that you don't have a sales assistant in the same way that you would typically have in a store. So whereas if I'm shopping in bricks and mortar, if I have a question or if I'm stuck, if I'm buying something that's really complicated or expensive, I can grab a salesperson and I can ask them all my questions and I can feel like I'm being taken in hand and being guided towards the right purchasing decisions by someone who's a real expert. When I'm buying online, traditionally, I wouldn't have that, right? And companies have tried to deploy chatbots in order to bridge that gap. But, and I've heard that, you know, this has been my experience, and I've heard this from many, many people as well, that the old generation of chatbots are pretty useless, right? I mean, nice try, but you really spend more of your time trying to figure out, you know, how can I say this so that the chatbot will understand and not having it understand you? And it just seemed like, you know, more time invested in getting the chatbot to understand me than it would have taken me to just solve the problem in some other way. With the new generation of chatbots that are based on generative AI, it's completely different. They have a much better understanding of what you're saying, much less need of the user to adapt to the bot itself. So I think this is also going to be a big change from the customer's perspective now when they're shopping online, is that they're going to be able to get that expert advice and guidance in a way that's much closer to what you would expect to get in a bricks and mortar store.
Yeah, so it could be much more personalized, as I know.
That's right. And I mean, look, in theory, I mean, those are the sort of obvious things that I mentioned that I think can be deployed, you know, in the short term and really provide an improvement for customers. But, you know, you can get a lot more visionary about what changes are going to happen. And sure, I mean, in theory, if the content's all being generated by an AI, then I could see the entire eShop could be completely customized for me, right? In theory, at least. So yeah, at some point in the future, maybe I'll go to an eShop and all the content will be written specifically for me. Like I'm a 50-something male, you know, living in Prague, etc. So I probably want the eShop to show me, you know, not show me products that are aimed at, you know, teenage girls, or show me products that are aimed at someone who's been living in North America. But also the text could be tailored to my requirements, my language, of course. You know, if I'm a whatever Tagalog speaker, maybe I want to see the site in Tagalog and it wouldn't be worth the company's while to translate it in the past. But if it's all just being generated automatically anyway, then maybe it suddenly becomes possible. So yeah, I think at some point in the future, you can imagine a completely personalized eShop for every single person who goes to the store, only showing the products they want, presented in the way they want to see them, and so forth.
Yeah, it's good that from the customer side, it will be maybe the basics that everybody accepts. But what about the marketers that stay behind the brand? How can they generate a large amount of personalized content with AI.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the marketing has been moving over the last few years very strongly in the direction of being content-driven, and content marketing is, you know, very much a thing. And I have to say, even from my personal experience, it's the technique that tends to work the best. So basically, instead of putting a sales pitch in front of people, you put like really interesting content in front of them, and you kind of nurture the relationship in that way. So of course, the bottleneck in the past has been producing that content, because it definitely works much better when it's personalized. So, you know, we've all received spam that was obviously written once and sent to 10 million people, and it's not relevant for you, and it sounds like spam, and we've been trained not to waste our time on it and just basically, you know, spam it or delete it, which is not advancing the interests of the marketeer. Whereas if I get a mail that seems very clearly written for me, you know, somebody took the time to understand my business and my needs and write me a message, then I'm much more likely to spend time on it. So from the marketer's perspective, whereas in the past, you know, probably there were limits on how many people you could contact with truly personalized messages because it's so time consuming. To have a human copywriter adapt all those messages one by one with an AI, it becomes much more feasible. So I think that's a very exciting prospect for marketers, that they're really going to be able to have this one-on-one communication with a much larger number of people than they would be able to have done so in the past.
You've mentioned at the early stages of this podcast that there are some products that needs to be customized. And maybe, in my opinion, they were behind the market. So if something need to be customized, they need a lot of info about the customer. What does he like? What does she like? What kind of color does the product have to be? Or what size it needs to be? So what do you think? What are the challenges with selling these customized products online, and how AI can help overcome them?
Well, look, I mean, to some degree, if you're trying to do that customization automatically, then it seems to me like that is clearly a generative task, right? So if you input a bunch of parameters, and to the extent that that product is customizable, then based on those parameters, I could suggest some type of customization. An obvious example would be clothing, right? Like if I'm buying a pair of trousers, they have to fit me. So if the system knows my size, then it can just offer me the pair that fits me, which is something I really have, you know, I buy a lot of clothes online and I never see this. I have to go and search for my size every single time, right? So how exactly does that information about my profile get transmitted to the retailer? I think that's an orthogonal question that needs to be worked out, because there are all these privacy concerns, right? So do I really want to get, you know, have the site immediately find out my age, gender, height, and all these things? You know, clearly people are sensitive about information that's a lot less personal than that. But to the extent that the site can get its hands on that information, perhaps with my explicit consent, then I think that definitely generative AI technologies are going to provide much more opportunities, or many more opportunities, for brands to immediately offer products that are customized in appropriate ways for that person. So yeah, like the size of a pair of trousers, maybe the fact that it knows that I live in Europe, it's going to only offer me products that run on 220 volts, just to take a few trivial examples. Or but maybe it knows my favorite color is blue, right? Which could, you know, at least when it's showing me something that's available in a range of colors, maybe it's going to show me automatically colors that I like, allow me to change them, but why show me, you know, pink if I'm not, you know, going to buy a pink object of that type. The other aspect of this that's near and dear to my heart, of course, is customization by the client. So I should mention, you know, my company makes a framework for producing 3D product configurators. So this is something that we've been spending quite a lot of time on, helping brands that have customizable products to enable customers to perform that customization when they're on their eShop. So to the extent, you know, I can't always guess what you want when you're buying a product, but I can give you all the tools you need to customize the thing to be exactly the way you want it to be. And there, I think generative AI can play a really big role as well. This is something that we're actively working on. We already have a very cool prototype of our configurator that's integrated with ChatGPT. So you can, you know, kind of type what you want instead of having to click in a traditional interface. But you can also ask it questions and get advice. And we think this is going to be a major step forward for those brands who are trying to provide customized products, because 3D product configurators, I think, traditionally have been just too hard to use. You know, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. You probably don't have a problem with it, but a lot of people shopping online are not that tech savvy. And, you know, even normal eShop interactions might be challenging for some people if they're older or they're just not used to using technology. So then put them in front of a 3D model with like this hierarchical range of options that they can choose. And it's not surprising that even for relatively simple products, a lot lot of people are just like, you know, I'm just gonna pick up the phone and call the store. I'm not sure what to do here. So to the extent that that's true, and that's really been reinforced anecdotally for me by a number of our clients, that, you know, there's just a significant category of customers shopping on an eShop who find the whole process a bit too complicated for them, then I think that things like ChatGPT can totally bridge that gap, because suddenly it's not like, wow, I'm being presented with this complicated user interface and there's stuff here and there's stuff here and I don't know what I'm supposed to click on. Instead, I'm chatting with what is basically a proxy for a sales representative. And if I'm stuck or if I have questions, I don't know, should I buy this or that, or what's the advantage of this one, or what exactly is a, you know, a multi-cooker, or what exactly is the difference between a gas burner and an induction burner? All these things can be fielded and handled by the bot. And that opens up this kind of advanced configuration scenario to a much broader range of users.
Have you seen any example of quick returns when they started to use AI for this configuration process?
Look, it's really way too early to say. Ask me again in 6 months. I mean, where we are with this right now, we have, you know, a bunch of configurators that are deployed with our clients, and we're getting this feedback that one of the issues they're facing is the, you know, the difficulty we use for clients who aren't so tech savvy. So we've implemented a prototype and we are user testing it right now. And the feedback is really great. I think it's supporting our hypothesis that a lot of people would prefer to interact with something that's going to have more like human-like behavior, but we haven't actually deployed it on any client sites yet. I think that's going to happen in the next, you know, sort of 3-4 months. And then we need a little bit of time to gather data. So how exactly that's going to influence the interactions is something that we'll probably know more towards the end of the year.
Yeah, that's the honest answer. Thank you.
I don't know. As usual, I don't know.
Yeah, and as you said, that it could replace a sales representative off-site. So off-site, if you have a sales representative, maybe you could do an AI on-site, which could do almost the same job for you online. So it could really help the people who are searching for the exact product.
I think it can totally do the job of a sales representative. It's one of those kind of types of jobs where these AIs are actually really good at it, right? Just being an expert in a specific area, providing advice. I've been playing with it for the configurator that we're using as kind of our testbed for this ChatGPT integration is a company that sells high-end French ranges. So they are pretty complicated. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of technical knowledge you need in order to make the right decisions. And with the bot, I can say things like, you know, add an extra oven on the right. Well, that's obvious, but I have to know that I want an extra oven to do that. But I can also say things like, I don't want my apartment to smell when I'm cooking. And it'll say, oh, you should add a hood to your oven. Here are the types of hoods we have available. And then I can ask questions about the hood and how loud is it and whatever. And it's going to be able to answer all those questions. So from the perspective of the client, yeah, I think this is like pretty much as good as a real sales representative. From the perspective of the company, I also think that it's going to be amazing for things like upselling and cross-selling. So once you've got the user interacting actively with an agent who's giving it advice and pointing in certain directions, then obviously it's a no-brainer to then say, well, you know, you're buying, you know, those trousers and we've had a whole discussion about it and I've given you advice so that you can get the best trousers possible. Why not get this shirt? It goes perfectly with those trousers, right? Like this kind of thing is going to be a very small step from the bot providing advice and help to the customer while they're shopping.
What kind of and how many data does this AI need from the company side? So how much effort do they need to put in to work seamlessly?
Okay, well, look, I mean, I can talk first specifically about our use case, which is configuration. And it's been an interesting journey because this is all so new, right? Like nobody's an expert in ChatGPT because it's only existed for, you know, 6 months or so. I think we're starting to be experts. But when we were first getting cracking on this integration between our configurators and ChatGPT, our natural inclination was, you know, let's tell the bot everything it needs to know about the product. And then it can just do the configuration. And when it makes changes, it can send, you know, what changes it's made back to us so that we can update the graphical interface so the user can actually see the updated model. And so we wrote like this super long prompt that explained all the, because we were doing it for these French ovens, right? And they are, you know, it's not just like height, width, depth, and color. I mean, there is a heck of a lot of options available. So the prompt was very long and all the constraints are detailed. And what we kind of discovered was that we kind of got into a game of whack-a-mole, if you know what I mean. So we'd get very close to where you're like, hey, this is really great. It really understands me and it's making the changes I want. But there's just these few issues, right? So let's update the prompt and let's make sure it absolutely understands, you know, this or that other. But the only way to get it to do what you want is to kind of keep tweaking the prompt and testing, you know, there's no sort of formal specification involved. And what we found is that, you know, we'd fix one problem and two more problems would appear, basically. We'd fix one of those problems, two more problems appear. It just seemed like you were going to get to kind of 80% and never get beyond them with that approach. So now what we're doing, and it seems like a much more effective approach, is just having the configurator do the configuration and have have the bot kind of translating from human language commands into more formal commands that it then sends to the configurator. And the configurator comes back and says, you know, I could do what you wanted me to do, or I couldn't. And if I couldn't, you know, here's why, so that the bot can communicate that back to the user. And that's working way better. In fact, I was very pleasantly surprised to see how quickly we went from kind of 80% to, I don't know, 95% success when chatting with the bot. So, I mean, there is still, in terms of the inputs, yeah, you have to make a system prompt. That's, you know, big part of our know-how is just understanding how do I write 4,000 tokens that tell the bot, you know, you're a configurator for this type of product, here's how you should interact and so forth. But we no longer have to provide it with any specific information about the configuration. That's all handled by the configurator. So yeah, I think the bar is actually relatively low for manufacturers now. If they want to, you know, have that kind of configuration use case, then most of the work is still the same as it was before we had the chat integration. You have to tell the configurator, here are all the options that product has, and here are the values that can be assigned to each option, and so forth. Now, if you wanted to take the next step and have, you know, something like ChatGPT used for actual product search on an eShop, right? So not configuring something, but just finding the right product based on a bunch of criteria, then I think, yes, you will have to teach the bot about all those products in some kind of formal way. And that is still, you know, very speculative. It's not something that we're necessarily actively working on. But I think that you'd need a, depending on how many products you have, it seems to me you're never going to have a prompt that's big enough to capture all that. So I think you'd still have to kind of have it call back to your search engine in some way, knowing that the bot is working with embeddings, right? So it's actually taking the product descriptions potentially and kind of mapping them into a multidimensional space, and it can handle that embedding side, and then you could take those embeddings and you could link them to some kind of other database. I mean, it gets kind of technical, but I think that there's probably not much more. You know, the bottom line is I don't think you need a lot more to have an eShop powered by generative AI that lets you find products or lets you configure products than you would need just for an eShop that was doing those things without AI. You know, you need to know all the information about the products. If you're searching, you need to know the characteristics of the products that are relevant for the search. If you're configuring, you need to know the options and what values those options can have, whether using AI or not. So actually, that long answer probably led me to the conclusion that you probably don't really need very much additional information beyond what you already have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And basically, you say that AI will help people who have customizable products to sell quickly and maybe just open the doors for online world. Because maybe before that, people have to go into the shop, tell everything to the sales representative, and they will make a customizable, I don't know, kitchen stand or something else. But now they could do it online and basically automatically.
That's right. I mean, look, generative AI is not a prerequisite for this. So, for example, the very first 3D configurator that we did is for a company called Kilo. They're a small furniture company in the Netherlands. So they have a shop in Amsterdam. They sell really cool designer furniture that's highly customizable. They actually use CNC machines to cut the furniture out of these kind of standardized plywood boards. So they have this very flexible approach where they create furniture that's made up of different pieces of this board. And it's super easy to say, oh, I want that to be a little bit wider, I want it to be a little bit taller. Then once you have that all kind of drafted, then you just send the design to the CNC machine, which is a big robot that cuts it out of the boards, and the process is largely automated with, as I said, a lot of flexibility. So when we started talking to them about 3 years ago, they were only able to sell these customized pieces to customers when they actually walked into the store in Amsterdam in person, sat down with one of the designers, explained what they wanted. Oh, I want this piece, but I want it to be 20 centimeters wider. And then that designer would sketch it out and they would make, I don't know, like a CAD model. And then that would be converted into a format that the CNC machine understood. So this is really limiting their market, right? Because they had an eShop, but they were only able to sell the standardized pieces on the eShop. So what we did is we made a configurator for them, you know, independently of any ChatGPT or other generative AI stuff. The configurator already was a huge step forward for them, because suddenly they weren't able to sell customized pieces only to customers who were physically there in their store in Amsterdam. They can sell them to anyone worldwide, because you just go to their website and you can do all that configuration in the configurator on the website. And it also has other advantages. I mean, it clearly reduces the amount of manpower they need to make those sales, because they don't need a human designer working with every customer, and also reduces the risk of errors, because to a large degree, you're just going straight from whatever the user configured on the website, and they can see it in 3D and they can rotate it and they can even use AR and they can make sure it's exactly what they want. And then when they press the buy, it's basically just being sent straight to the CNC machine without human intervention required. So much more, you know, likely that they're going to get exactly what they want, that nothing's going to be lost in translation and so forth. So what the generative AI is adding to the picture is really just making the configurators easy to use. So there's two steps, you know, I have the configurator. Okay, now I can sell customized products worldwide from my website. People don't need to come in person. They don't need to interact with a human designer, but it may be a bit difficult for a lot of people to do that configuration independently when they were used to walking into the store and having someone who could advise them. So now we're bridging that gap because the bot is going to be able to interact with them much in a way much closer to that human designer. So now it's like, wow, there's really no reason to go into the shop at all. And if my customer's in, you know, North America or in Asia or in Africa or wherever, they can still buy my stuff even if my store is in the Netherlands.
Yeah, great. But people tend to make suggestions that maybe have not much of a sense, or it couldn't be, I don't know, made by the CNC machine. How could this AI handle that? Will there be any human touch before they start to make these kitchen stands?
I think in theory, you do not need any human intervention at all. And at least I'd be keen to have that debate. I don't really see it. The configurator is what is enforcing those constraints. So again, this is independent of any generative AI. Our configurator never lets you configure anything that can't actually be built. That's kind of the point. So to the extent that the user is just interacting with the configurator, you know, there's not going to be the problem of, oh, they designed something and that can't be created. And the generative AI and the chat interface is just a bolt-onto that, right? So those constraints all stay there, and whatever you configure, you basically have a guarantee that it can be built. I mean, maybe it's interesting to say, just as, you know, sort of as an anecdote, there is a little bit of human interaction still involved in the process. The way that they do it, because these boards are pretty big and you want to use as much of the board as possible, like, I mean, it's expensive as well. They kindly offered me a bunch of their stuff in a special color that I wanted, that they don't usually offer. So I actually received a bunch of their furniture the other day, and it's really high quality. Like, the boards are thick and nicely laminated and all. So, you know, you definitely don't want to be throwing out a lot of that board just because of when you cut the sheets out, there was a lot left over. So that leads to this interesting exercise called nesting, which you might be familiar with, or definitely some listeners might be familiar with that. I think it's a pretty common scenario where you're trying to fit as much stuff as possible onto some area. And the nesting is like an algorithm that's going to put all the pieces on there while minimizing waste. So they can actually take orders from multiple clients as long as it's the same color. Like, you ordered a bunch of yellow furniture, I ordered a bunch of yellow furniture, and maybe, you know, with all your stuff and all my stuff, we can use one whole board and have very little. And of course, it also depends, where do I put those shapes? So we license the third-party technology to do that nesting. It's pretty whiz-bang, advanced, mathematical, God knows what, to like minimize the wastage. And so all they do now is we made a dashboard for them. And as the stuff goes into production, they can look at each board. The nesting has been done automatically by the system, so they can see exactly how we're planning to lay out the pieces, and all they have to do is basically click OK. So they wanted to have that final manual step, because if it makes a mistake, yeah, I mean, if you waste a couple of boards, that's a lot of money. That's like a few hundred euros or whatever down the tubes. But I'm not sure actually how often, if ever, they don't just click OK and say go ahead. So I need to check that with them. But in theory, it is a fully automated process. In practice, they were a bit nervous about having no interaction at all. But I think, you know, it's kind of thing where, you know, you operate it for a few months, and if it's like always getting it right, then after a while, you're like, okay, we don't need that step anymore. So perhaps that'll become redundant at some point.
If you had the time and energy to write a book about generative AI and how it will convert e-commerce, what would be the title of it?
Oh my gosh. Books today usually have two titles, right? So first, I would have some like boring, like e-commerce and generative AI, you know, a match made in heaven or something like that, and then some subtitle. And yeah, no, I think it's really, you know, how this new technology is going to completely transform the way that we shop online.
Great.
There's my subtitle.
Great. And last but not least, I want to give some seeds and nutrition for D2C brands to grow. So there is quick questions, and I want some quick answers from you. First is, what books or influencers would you recommend to read or follow as a e-commerce or D2C brand?
Gosh, I mean, it's actually not really my area of expertise. I'd be in a better position to advise a tech company building tech products. But I think, I mean, a book that I read recently about positioning that I loved, it's called Obviously Awesome. So I'd really, anybody who's trying to figure out how do I position my products in a way that's going to resonate with clients, I would recommend that. Another one that I liked, it's kind of cheesy and it's kind of over the top, but it really influenced the way I think about sales, is a book called Sell Like Crazy by this Australian guy who runs a marketing agency in Australia. And I think he has some really good ideas about how companies can sell more effectively. So I'm really a tech guy, and I think a lot about how to sell tech products. I do think a lot of those concepts could be relevant to brands as well. So if you're interested in kind of how high tech marketing is happening, those are two great books to read. So
I don't know how the last three questions will apply for your company, but let's make it a try. So what is the biggest mistake that e-commerce brands could make? The single biggest one, maybe from the tech side.
Again, like I don't claim to really be an expert. I'm an expert in technology, but I have been active in the e-commerce space for quite a while. And I also shop a lot online. And yeah, I mean, I honestly think the biggest mistake is having a suboptimal search experience. I just encounter this all the time where it's just so hard to find the product I want. And, you know, you like set a bunch of filters and then you click on one of the products and it's not quite it. So you go back, but it's lost all your filters, right? Or it scrolled to somewhere else in the list. And it's just painful to look at three or four products and compare them. So I would say if I were advising an e-commerce company, make sure, you know, do user testing, drill down and make sure that users are not getting frustrated when they're searching for products, because that's obviously going to lead them to just give up and go somewhere else.
The third is, could you tell me your quick growth tip related to e-commerce?
Well, look, I mean, what causes you to grow is usually more sales. So I think that, you know, getting the word out and getting in front of more people is obviously the most effective way. But, you know, that's not very insightful. I mean, I would, in terms of what we are focused on, say, maybe look into making customized products if you're not doing it already. There are technologies now that didn't exist a few years ago or that are maturing rapidly, like 3D printing, that allow you to create one-off products or highly customized products a lot more easily and cheaply than in the past. And there's a lot of research that shows that customers really love personalized products. So I don't know if that's a hot growth tip, but maybe something for brands to look into.
And the last one is, what tools would you use as a DTC brand for growth? Like tech tools that you use also?
Yeah, I don't know if I have any particularly original insights there. I think that, you know, there's best practices out there. So having an e-commerce platform that allows you to you know, rapidly update your messaging and your content, having a proper CRM so that you can track people and have proper, you know, marketing campaigns, all the obvious stuff. I wish I were more of a e-commerce marketing expert, but for me, it's just, you know, make sure you're using best of breed tools and make sure that you know how to use them.
Great. Thank you, Matt, for accepting my call and giving this tremendous amount of value for the listeners.
My pleasure. It's really great to speak to you. Enjoyed it.
And don't forget to try these tips today. For more seeds and nutrition, stay tuned for the next episode.